You're listening to The 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. If you are a fan of NPR, you have likely heard this before.
I am Bill Curtis, and here is your host at the Chase Bank Auditorium in downtown Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Bill. Thank you, everybody. Thank you all so much.
That, of course, is from the weekly NPR quiz show, Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. For more than two decades, host Peter Sagal and dozens of panelists have taped the show in front of live audiences in Chicago and also across the country. But these days, you might have noticed that the show sounds a little different.
Here is your host, probably wearing pants, but no promises, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Bill, and thanks to our audience of the imagination. Although, honestly, after 5 weeks of this, I am starting to hallucinate that I can smell them. That, by the way, was canned applause from the opening night of Hamilton.
So for more on the quiz show and how host Peter Sagal is staying busy, I'd like to welcome the man himself. Peter Sagal, welcome to the 21st. Okay, we seem to be having a technical problem there, so we will ask you to stand by as we try to reconnect with Peter Sagal here on the 21st. Okay, I think we have Peter Sagal back with us now, so I will begin the introduction again. For more on the quiz show and how host Peter Sagal is staying busy, I'd like to welcome him to the 21st. Peter, thanks for coming on today.
Thank you, and this is why I don't have radio. Too much can go wrong.
The producers have written in here that I should say, forgive me, but I will not ask if you're wearing pants or not. I don't know if you got to hear, but it was the clip where Bill Curtis is speculating on that fact.
Yes.
I am curious. Are you wearing pants?
I am, in fact, wearing pants.
Okay, good to know.
I don't know if any of your listeners have ever come to see us live, but if you do, you know that even as radio, I dress up just a little. I always wear like slacks and a jacket and a shirt, sometimes a tie. And I feel like I need to do that because, you know, it's sort of my uniform for work. And
sure.
I'm not keeping to that, but I feel that the at-home quarantine equivalent is put on pants.
Yeah.
Just put on pants so you can approach your day with the requisite level of seriousness. So I am, in fact, wearing pants. No shoes, though. I'm not wearing shoes.
No shoes.
I'm wandering around barefoot.
I've found that it hurts my feet. But, of course, you're a runner, and we can talk a little bit about that later. But, you know, I have been wearing a collared shirt to work, but shorts. That's kind of my coronavirus.
No, at this point, after, you know, at my age, after running so long, my feet are all callous all the way up to the ankle, so I feel nothing.
Okay. So for the past month or so, you and your colleagues have been doing Wait, Wait remotely. What is it like doing jokes without an audience?
Well, for us, it's a little nostalgic. Again, I can't speak to the experience of your listeners, but old school folk, OG Wait, Wait listeners might remember that when the show began, it was in a studio without an audience every week, quite intentionally. I don't know what the intent was. Well, actually, I do. The idea was that it would be easier to produce if we didn't have to fly people in, easier to edit if we were able to do it in studios. And it took us a ridiculously long while, if you ask me, to figure out that comedy shows should be done in front of audiences. People might laugh. And if they do, that's good. So we moved to doing live audiences as special occasions in the early 2000s and then permanently in 2015. And have been doing it that way since then. So having to go back first to studios and now to our literal homes, our closets, is both very unusual but also weirdly familiar. It's sort of, I guess, the radio equivalent of being forced to move into your parents' home deep in middle age. I mean, you don't want to be there, but at least you know where the bathroom is.
Yeah. So is everybody using Zoom like the rest of us are?
Yeah.
For everything?
Technically, the way we do it is we all record ourselves. I've got one of these very nice high-def recorders, the same kind of thing that NPR reporters use when they're going out in the field to do interviews and such. And we record ourselves, but we talk to each other via Zoom. So we can still see each other, of course, you know, through the mediation of a screen and react to each other. And that sort of gets to the secret of how this is working, to the extent that it is, that without an audience to react to for them to react to us, we have to serve as each other's audience. We've talked about that quite explicitly, that we need to, even more than we usually do, listen to each other, react to each other, play off each other. Basically, I used to say to people when we did our show back in the olden times, i.e. 3 months ago, that we every week we throw a big party and invite everybody to join via the radio. Well, we can't really, parties aren't allowed anymore. So instead, we are having a really wonderful conversation and hopefully inviting people to join in that conversation, even if we can't necessarily hear them.
Yeah. You know, I've been thinking about this question of comedy without an audience, and you talked about how your show evolved to include the audience. Are you consuming the Colbert's, you know, at-home
yes.
show, some of these?
I am,
John
absolutely.
Oliver? What do you think of their, you know, is it working for you without the audience? Have they found a rhythm?
And it's really interesting to watch, because I've watched it with a great degree of sympathy. One of the things we've discovered when we lost our audience, and we did that quite literally, everything more or less changed on Wednesday, March 11th. That was the night when we went from, is this going to happen, to, oh my God, it's happening. And it just so happened that on March 12th, we were scheduled to do our show in the Fox Theater, a 4,500 seat theater in Atlanta, Georgia. And at the last minute, we let everybody know, please don't come. We can't have a large audience. And we did it on a stage facing 4,500 empty seats. So the sudden lack of an audience was quite vivid. And losing an audience, to quote the great Western philosopher Joni Mitchell, you don't know what you've got till it's gone. And we had always known that audiences were great because they laugh and it sounds like people are having fun, and that sounds like fun and people enjoy themselves more when they hear it. What we didn't realize was how much we rely on an audience for not just laughter, but constant feedback. Mm-hmm. Are they enjoying themselves? Are they bored? Are they irritated? Do they want to hear more of this? Do they want to hear less of this? Are they being polite but wish you'd move on? Have you gone too far? Have you not gone far enough? You're constantly getting this feedback from an audience that you're not aware of until you lose it. So I have watched Colbert, and I've watched John Oliver, and I've watched Saturday Night Live and many of the others dealing with the same thing. It's really disconcerting at first, especially if it's just you reduced to looking into a camera, making jokes for people you can't hear or see. It's really, I can't recommend it. However, two things. First of all, we have an advantage. We have each other. We have a panel. We have a group of people who can be there for each other. And I also say that the other guys, our competitors in the space, are getting better at it. I think John Oliver in particular is really good at it. He's really good at like looking into the camera and talking just to you and trusting that you're interested and amused and are with him. Saturday Night Live, I think, got worlds better in their second attempt of an audience-less show than they did in their first. It's weird. It's just a matter of it's almost like Tinkerbell, where you have to clap and you bring Tinkerbell. You just have to believe in Tinkerbell. If you just believe enough that your audience is with you and are still enjoying you, even if you can't hear them, then you'll do great. It's that leap of faith, though, that's sometimes hard to do.
So as this crisis is continuing to evolve, we are all bombarded with news and information all the time. And your show has always brought people the news, but, you know, obviously not in the same way as other outlets. One recent example, you have a little clip here, but you actually had Tom Hanks back on Wait Wait to talk about his experience with the virus. Let's listen to that.
Now that you've had it, aren't you supposedly like immune? You're superheroes? You can walk amongst us and be immune? Or is that just nonsense?
Well, a lot of the question is what now? You know, what do we do now? Is there something we can do? And in fact, we just found out that we do carry the antibodies.
Wait, so can we harvest your body? Can we harvest your blood?
Yes.
Have you been approached?
We have not only been approached, we have said, do you want our blood? Can we give plasma? And in fact, we will be giving it now to the places that hope to work on what I would like to call the Hank scene.
Yeah.
it's a great audience you've got there. So
yes,
we were just talking about antibody testing in a more serious segment before this one, but
I
wonder, can you talk about, do you feel any sort of responsibility, as so many of us do, you know, to focus on the coronavirus, to bring people news at this time, or is
it? Oh, absolutely not.
Yeah.
Okay. We, well, let me put it this way. We feel a responsibility, but not inform people in this area. And frankly, that's your job. And it's the job of all of our colleagues at NPR News on All Things Considered and Morning Edition and Scott Simon and then the weekend shows. We see ourselves very much as a in contrast to all the very serious and valuable stuff that serious people like you do. We exist to provide some kind of service, which is frankly a relief, or it's supposed to be a relief to people. You know, we've seen this happen before during very serious times. Most we've been around a long time, as you know, so our institutional memory goes back to 9/11. And so whenever something like this happens, something truly terrible and concerning and alarming, we see our role is to just give people a little break. Some of that is making jokes about very, very serious things. So we make jokes about the coronavirus, its various the president's interesting responses. But we also just talk about other things. You know, we talk about just whatever goofy things we can find. And in fact, if there's really a problem, it's that not enough goofy stuff is happening. People talk about, you know, perhaps, you know, disruptions in our meat supply. That's bad. You know what's really a problem? Disruptions in the supply of goofy news. If you don't let people out of their house, they can't commit dumb crimes or pursue really silly scientific studies. And that's a crisis for us.
Yeah. So we've only got a couple of minutes left, but I want to shift gears a little bit. We have been talking on this show, as many of us are quarantining or at least just staying at home. People are pursuing new hobbies. You are an avid runner. You even wrote a whole book about it, The Incomplete Book of Running. I would tell people to go to the store and find it, but please don't go to the store and find it. Maybe you can look online.
No. Buy from your local independent bookstore. Many of them have online services.
Please. There you go. So I personally only run when chased, but with a lot of people looking for new hobbies, what is your elevator pitch for the sport?
My elevator pitch, here we go. Running is the most wonderful and perfect sport because almost anyone can do it if they're physically able. You need no courses. You need no lessons. You need no collaborators or teams. And you don't need equipment, just appropriate clothes and shoes. And if there's ever been a time when running is the solution to your problems, it's now. Why? It gets you out of the house. It gets you moving. It has health benefits. It's one of the few things that's allowed. But and to finish the elevator pitch on a much more serious note, we're all locked inside. We're all staring at screens or listening to podcasts or radio. We're all just sort of marinating in the crisis. Everybody needs to get outside. Everybody needs to move. Everybody needs to get out of their heads and into their bodies. And there is no better way to do that than just go for a run. Because why? You were born to do it.
And you... Done. An emphasis, and I'm not going to let you finish there, because an emphasis of your approach, I think, is no music, no podcasts. Get inside your own head as well as your own body.
Drives you crazy. I know people. A lot of people are like, what do you mean? I can't endure my own thoughts for half an hour. And I'm like, dude, that's a problem. And the solution is not to continue to drown out your own thoughts. Your solution is to let them out. I can't tell you how this is very personal, how relieving it is to let some of those thoughts come to the surface. Everybody is freaked out. Many people are very angry at their political leaders for doing something or failing to do something. Many people are very anxious. And the best way to deal with those thoughts is let them bubble up. Don't keep suppressing them with amusement or music or other people's thoughts. Let them come out. I can't tell you how many times I've gone for a run around my little suburb and, you know, delivered muttering under my breath, you know, incredibly devastating condemnations of like the people I don't like in the news or speeches I wish people were giving or whatever it may be. And then I come home and no one's the worse for wear because no one has heard it. I haven't jeopardized my family or career by saying this stuff out loud, but I feel better. And I recommend it to everybody. Everybody needs to let their own thoughts out. Otherwise they're going to stay in there. They're going to go spoil. They're going to spoil. They're going to get moldy and start to smell.
Peter Sagal is a writer, a running philosopher, and host of NPR's Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. Peter, thanks so much for speaking with us today.
My pleasure, and I hope everybody in your listening audience stays safe and sane, and I'll see everybody on the other side.
All right. Our show, and that is all the time we have for the 21st today. Our show is produced by Libby Foster and Anna Casey. Eunice Alpison's our intern. Technical direction and engineering comes from Jason Croft and Steve Mork. Reginald Hardwick's our news director. I'm Brian Mackey. The show is a production of Illinois Public Media. Thanks for listening.